I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. In this episode, we'll be focusing on understanding the center of excellence in the Power Platform and really setting the scene for enterprise growth. Today's guest is from Germany. He's the manager of experience design at Avanade. He's crazy about learning, and his superpower is kindness. You can find links to his bio and socials in the show notes for this episode, as always. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Well, thanks. Hi there. Thanks for having me. I'm a little bit nervous, I do have to admit. My superpower is kindness. Where does that come from?
It comes from your GitHub repository you've got there, that your superpower is kindness.
Right, I put this in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Funny, I think there was a quote from Chris Huntingford I got once when I met him.
Awesome. That is so cool, and I love it. Kindness is so important, and I love it. That's your superpower.
Yeah, yes. Still, do you have to use and utilize GitHub more? It's been a little bit quiet up there in my repository lately, but yeah.
I like your profile there. It jumps out. You see, a lot of GitHub is very boring and stale. Yours actually pops, so I did enjoy it. Before we drill into what we're going to chat about today, tell me a bit about Michael. Tell me what you do when you're not working. Yeah, I often, you know, give the three Fs: food, family, and fun. What do they mean to you? I'll let you riff on that.
Food, family, and fun. That are three great Fs, actually. I would start with family, actually, because this is really important to me. I do have two little girls. Mm-hmm. They are 3 and 5 now, so really small. And I do love to spend time with my kids. This is actually two girls. Mm-hmm. This is a huge part of my life, actually. And when I think about what I do for fun, I'm one of those crazy people who do what they do at work also for fun, like closing down your work laptop,
wow,
opening up your fun laptop, and do the same thing over again. Mm-hmm. But I realized since I have kids that I do have to have like a hard line, a hard cut. Like there's work, there's fun projects at work, but there are kids. And this, they always come first. And so family, this is a big F. It's a very important one, actually. Yeah, food, actually, that you mentioned, that is another. I was just talking with a coworker today. Food is really important for me. I was talking with a coworker today, and we were talking about traveling the world, like backpacking style. That's what we do, what we like. And she was asking me, how do you pick your countries where you want to travel to? And I just said, well, it's all about the food. I travel for food and stay for the country and for the mentality and the people. But I go for the food. So I cook a lot.
Wow.
At home. And now I can combine two apps, actually. I cook a lot with my girls. They're still small, but I try to include them as much as I can, like into the whole process of cooking food, preparing food, and eating. That is actually the huge parts of my life. And if you would just have asked me, what do you do in your free time? I wouldn't have thought about it, because do you know that when you ask somebody, when somebody asks you, so what do you do for fun? Wait, who am I? What's my name again? What do I do? Damn it. But yeah, that's a great introduction. So food and family, that's and those two things beside work actually brings me fun. This is
nice.
What I do for fun.
I like it.
I just realized I have a bunch of hobbies, but I have way too less time actually to fulfill them.
give me a couple of your top hobbies.
My top hobbies would be like drawing and doing art, like painting, drawing, mm-hmm, graphic design, mm-hmm, something like that. is number one.
Nice.
Number two is playing guitar, I would say.
Very cool.
And I'm just getting back into one of my old hobbies, and that would be cycling. I love to go downhill cycling and all this kind of rough fun. Mm-hmm. I really like that, but I get into that, back into that, because I took a break after the kids were born. I was like, this is a dangerous hobby maybe, and I'm getting old now. I have responsibilities for my kids, so maybe slow it down a bit, but my kids are getting bigger now. The small one is 3 years old already, so I can get back into that stuff. Yeah.
So good, so good. Of the countries you've visited, which if I said, you know, here's $10,000, you can go back there for the week, which country would you choose?
Vietnam.
Interesting.
Super easy. Why? I don't have to think. The food. Yeah. The food is really amazing. Mm-hmm, and that was the first reason I got there initially. But when I got there, I met the people. And I had some struggles because I don't speak Vietnamese or any related language. Mm-hmm. And many of the people that I met there, and as I mentioned earlier, I'm traveling like a backpacking style. You don't visit the big cities, but you meet people from like the countryside. They don't speak English or German for that matter. And then you have to communicate with hands and signs and gestures and something like that. And I really like that. And all the people I met there were so kind. They were like inviting me, sharing their food and sharing their stories and then just creating a good time. And I enjoyed that so much. That really stood out for me, like from all the countries I visited.
That's so cool. That is so cool. I love it. I love it.
But I haven't visited all the countries yet. So there are still many to go. So...
Oh, how many, as in what's on your bucket list? What are the ones that you definitely want to see next?
What I really want to see is Argentina. Would love to go there for the wine, maybe, and the countryside.
Yes.
I really, really, really want to go to Nepal, if it's possible, at some point.
Nice. Yes.
And I do have to visit, well, I've been there... Norway. I've been to Oslo a couple of times, but actually when I was in university, I started to learn Norwegian, and I've just visited Norway 2 times for Microsoft events now, and I would really to travel the country to see. It's a long country, which like a lot of border, and I would really like to see that. And as we are talking right now, I've never been to New Zealand, neither Australia, and that is something that's like an unknown world. Just realize what's in the internet, and the internet says everything in Australia wants to kill you or tries to kill you. So this sounds adventurous and interesting. So, still so many things.
I lived in Australia for four years,
and you're still alive.
And I never saw a spider, which is the number one thing that people freak out about.
Absolutely, yes.
And I only once saw a snake, a big black snake, and I was in a 4x4 vehicle driving through a forest, so I wasn't like anywhere close to me. And those are the only two things that could kill me, that, and I never really encountered them for 4 years.
So what are you saying is not everything I read on the internet is true?
Mm-hmm.
That's a bold statement.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It's a bold statement. All those things will kill you in Australia if you encounter them. So this is the thing, is that when you live in a city, like I was living, I think, 25 stories up in an apartment block, snakes don't get up there, neither do spiders really. They don't, hang out at that kind of altitude. So that's probably the reason I didn't really live in the suburbs or anything like that. So, which is where you hear the stories come, you know, people pulling their curtains back and there's a big huntsman spider, which is as big as your hand, but it's not that specific one won't kill you. But then I remember talking with a guy from Microsoft, and he was like, oh, he was just looking at the edge of the deck on his house, and there was a big python snake living down there. And I was just like, you know, I couldn't have that. I couldn't live with snakes that close at all.
Yeah, so maybe it's not only about the country, but the environment where you are right now. Yeah, so Maybe it's more than the internet says. So.
Yes. The internet is sensational.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about, as we shift gears and talk about, you know, how do you go about setting up the power platform to scale in organizations? And I don't want to, if you like, focus on tool sets per se, but when you take on a new customer, or you might be even in the discovery phase with a new customer, what are you thinking about? What are you going to ask? What are you going to look for to understand where this customer is at now and where you kind of, or based on perhaps where they want to go? Or often, you know, if I look at my experience, customers don't know where they want to go. They've heard something about this could solve a lot of problems. And so a lot of what you're doing is educating on the art of the possible, you know, where you are now to where you'll be in 12 months, 24, 36 months time with the technology. Tell us about your thinking process.
Well, you just said that customers often don't know where they want to go, and they heard things on the internet. Like, have you heard about Power Platform? That is like a cool thing right now. Have you heard about Copilot? That's a new hot shit right now. Yeah. So there is Power Platform. We want to do Power Platform. That is often what I hear from customers. And well, I think it's not about the tools and the techniques or like the shiny new things. It's about the business case, really. And right now where I come in is when my customers say, okay, we have this awesome idea and we heard Power Platform and let's do this. So what would your Power Platform approach be to our business case? And usually what I hear when I talk to customers, they talk to like people from sales and pre-sales before, and they were pitching in ideas. And I don't want to step on anyone's toes here, but if somebody from sales tells me there's a customer, they have like this business case, and we can solve this with Power Platform, please, Michael, go in there and solve this with Power Platform. I usually start with, okay, let's pretend I don't know what this is all about. I haven't listened to sales or what you said. So please, can you explain what is your problem? And I don't want to hear your solution or what you think you might need or what the cool thing about Power Platform is. What is your problem, really? And then I have an approach that works really well, and that is something like a joke. Do you know the difference between a doctor and a consultant? When a doctor finds a spot that hurts, they usually stop pressing. If a consultant finds a spot that hurts, they increase the pressure and really dig into that.
I love it.
And that is something when a customer explains what their business case is, that's where they start. And then it's, okay, but what's your problem? What do you want to solve? And if I find a spot that they would say, yeah, I don't want to talk about that much. Let's focus on the cool thing, like the Power Platform. It's shiny, it's new, and stuff like that. And I said, no. Let's take back a step to that you don't want to talk about, because that's usually where the problem is and where the root cause is, actually. And that is, I usually don't want to talk about the symptoms, but what's causing those symptoms, and dig a little bit deeper. So from my background, I do come from, not from a technical background, but I come from organizational development, where I talk to people a lot and we talk about organizational structures and team setups. And this is where I usually start looking for, problems, for things that annoy people, for things that are like, that really annoy you in your typical work, in your day-to-day work, because that is where I think Power Platform really shines. It's not the complicated business case, the critical business case, but it's the day-to-day work that really sucks sometimes. Like, fill out that Excel sheet, put it in an email, send it over to the next department, they get these numbers out, put it into a different system, yada, yada, yada. That's where I usually start digging around.
Makes sense. When do you have the scenario? Because I know that one of the areas that you're quite strong on is around governance with the Power Platform. When you then, you've been bought into a company because of a use case and you've uncovered what that is, and then you turn to, okay, let's look at the platform. Where do we go now from the platform perspective? First of all, tell me typically or generically, however you want to do it, What do you find when you first take a look at what's been going on inside the Power Platform? Tell me some of those stories that you tell about what you discover and what's been going on, and then I'm going to get you to talk about what's the path to structure, governance, and things like that from that point.
Yeah. Before I go into the topics or the things that I discover, I would cycle a little bit back actually to some of the Microsoft approach to sell the Power Platform. You know, it's pointy, pointy, clicky, clicky. It's easy, low code, no code. Everybody can do this. This is the whole story point. And I don't like that, because all the customers, they go all in. Hey, that's cool. That is new. Everybody can do this. Now let's try it out. And I do like people who like don't hesitate, don't overthink, but go into it and try things out. I do like that. But then there's a point where I come in and they said, hey, we clicked it a bit around and we tried it for a little bit, and we thought maybe we need a plan. We need to think. What do we want to achieve with the platform? Well, not too many customers say that. They're like, now we think we need a plan. And they say, okay, let's think first. What do you want to achieve? What do you want to utilize the platform for? And then I'm going to ask, what have you done already? What's going on in your tenant right now? And I say, nothing too much. A few flows, maybe a Canvas app. That's what we tried. And I think since Power Pages was announced, I'm like, okay, what do you have? Do you have AI models, Power Pages, and portals or whatever? And they usually say, no. There's just a couple of people, 5 to 6 people who clicked around a bit, and nothing too fancy. And then usually we install the CUE to take a look under the hood and what's going on, and then we find like 20 Power Pages. There are dozens of AI models, so there's way more than they expect. And it's like, okay, maybe we need to talk. Maybe we need to think about what happened and how is your approach with the Power Platform. I know Microsoft says it's easy, everybody can do this, and that's the point. Everybody can and everybody will do this, because there are many people out there who are curious. And if I see a shiny button, I click it.
Yes.
Many people are the same, and they see the button. This has got Power Automate. What's that? It's Power in the name, so I need to click that and try out what's happening there. So I can't blame anyone for trying things out and clicking around and see what happens. That's what I do usually. Let's try it out and find out. But that's usually the point where it comes to, let's say governance, or let's say, okay, let's take a quick stop here, take a deep breath and think about it. What we want to achieve, where do we want to go? Because this is usually, there's a fuss about new tools, about new tech. It's shiny, it's exciting, but it's all tech in the end. And we stop. I think we should stop thinking about features of tech and think about the business problem. What our business model? What do we do actually, and what do we want to achieve? As much as I like playing around with new toys. So yeah, that's usually what happens. And this is like the all-time favorite story. Like, do you use Power Pages? Nope, not at all. Oh well, look at that. There are 212 in there. It's wow. That was what happened. And I think in the last project, I had something like they had around 30 makers, so not too many. And they're building as quite a huge company, actually a global enterprise. And I said, okay, this is just a reasonable amount if you just started out, like 30 people playing around with it. That's fine. So I don't expect too many objects like apps and flows and whatnot. And we found over 700 Canvas apps. I was like, okay, 30 maker and 700 Canvas app, that's a lot. And then we looked into the details, and there was one maker in particular, and she was very busy because she made 600 of those apps. I was like, okay, what's going on here?
Wow.
Turned out she just made one app, but she wasn't aware of versioning. So she was saving a new version of the app, like a different file, over and over again, 600 times. That was really eating up storage capacity. That are those stories that happen if you don't know what's going on in your tenant. And it's easy to miss what's going on, because it's so easy and everybody can do that. Which is good on the one hand, but it can be like kind of fatal sometimes on the other hand.
Yeah. So what's your pathway forward then?
Well, first of all, we discover that and we see there's way more going on than you would expect. So, and that is the point where the customer usually really wants to get busy. Okay, let's do something. Let's keep it all together. Let's come up with rules and guidelines and how can we monitor, and like, it's getting hectic and busy. And that's a point where I usually tend to slow down again and say, okay, before we do anything, we need a goal, a vision. Where do we want to go? What do we want to achieve with the platform? Because if we don't have a goal, we can't define any steps that leads us toward this goal. So, and I really like to, and I don't know if it's mean, but sometimes I like to take this energy of this, oh my God, what's happening in my tenant? I didn't have a clue what's going on. I like to take that energy and to put that into the part that's not the technical part, but define a vision. Let's talk about your mission and where you want to go with a platform, like citizen developer approach, fusion teams, or just like replace legacy applications, something like that. Let's talk about this for a moment before we get all technical again. Yeah, so sometimes I do have the idea that I slow down the customer again and again to say, okay, let's think before we act, actually.
It's good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm working well with that. I'm having fun, actually.
So where you take them from that point, and you've set a vision, you've set a pathway, what's your process to get them to we're now in a position where we've cleaned up what's gone on and we now can build? What is a baseline you feel the organization is ready now to move forward with starting to scale? What does that baseline look like for you that you want from a platform perspective in place? What are the guardrails that you want in place? What are the design patterns that you want in place? What are those things that you want to see that has now taken this organization and put it in a position that says, okay, you now have a platform that you can start meeting multiple of your business goals on?
Okay, first I would like, if we have that goal and then we have the point in time where we said, okay, we've cleaned up, I just want to make sure that this is like that. This can take some time because usually the mess is quite a lot. So the way you said it, it just seems like, okay, we've seen what's going on, we have a goal, then we cleaned up and then we go. But this is usually like a long process, right? Because there is things going on and the platform is in usage right now usually, and so we can't put a hard stop on that. So but yeah, let's skip that part and let's say, okay, how to go on. And I think that differs from customer to customer, from use case to use case, because there are large enterprises who said, okay, when we utilize the platform, we want this citizen developer movement and we want to support them with, for example, first level support. But not every organization can deliver that kind of what you need for first level support for, let's say, even 50 makers. They do have questions like every day. And when I remember back in my beginnings with Power Platform, when I designed my first canvas ever, like I had a question every 5 minutes and I can't raise a ticket any 5 minutes. So the point is that I want the organization, and if I have a Power Platform administrator, or even better, a Power Platform administrator team, because I'm really like to quote from the Microsoft governance white paper, this is a teamwork job. This is not a single player game. Usually we try to envision what's your vision, what's your goal, where do you want to be, how do you think? Like the makers, they are doing their thing and they're finding awesome business solutions for their everyday problems. You don't have to take care about that. This is great. And then it's a question, for example, around support. Can you like have like an SLA or like support in any kind of way? So yeah, we can do that. And then we say, okay, now let's think about you have 30 makers. Now let's think about you have 300 makers. Can you still deliver the support? And it's like, nah, I don't know. I do have a job, because that's another issue, actually. Most Power Platform admins that I know, they've been in the wrong meeting at the wrong time, and boom, suddenly they are Power Platform admins, and this is like on top on the day-to-day job. So it's kind of a difficult situation for Power Platform admins, but for them, usually, because they struggle, I like to give them an idea of something that I've been talking about this year a lot. This is called Power Platform, the bare minimum. What is the bare minimum in terms of governance? What you need to have done, at least, so that the tenant is secure. From there, you can build it up step by step. And look, what's your business case? How many makers do you have? Citizen developer fugitives, what there is, there are so many options and possibilities to go with the platform. From there, you can build up, but you need to have this baseline. And maybe that would answer your question. What is this baseline? What does it look like? I usually start with a bare minimum of tenant settings. Like, for example, tenant isolation, self-service purchase. This is quite a sneaky one, actually. Just think about, do you want it enabled? Do you want like to have a handle on it and to limit it? To who is able to create new environments, new DLPs, like who is really to be in the position to create how we want to use the platform. Not how to work in the platform, but how to get set the rails in the platform. That is this just your team or every one who is basically an environment administrator, for example. So kind of tenant settings. And from there, we go to environment strategy. Like, what would you be your tenant to look like? How do you want to shape it? And it's absolutely okay to start with, I don't know, two or three environments. Microsoft had this North Star architecture guideline somewhere where you have like multiple environments all with DLPs and different security roles, and it's really confusing and a lot to take in. And I always say it's okay just to start with two or three environments. You got your default.
Yes.
You got an environment for your, I don't know, your administrator crew. And that's a perfect place to start. So you don't have to come up with a full-blown experience, and you don't have to think it all through. Start at some point, and then you can build up from that. And with environments, there come the question about data loss prevention policies. The more environments you have, sometimes a lot of customers think the more DLPs you need, but I think there's really one golden rule is that you need at least one tenant-wide data loss prevention policy. So wherever your user gets a new environment from a trial experience, from the community plan, or whatever, they should be covered by at least one DLP so that you have an idea. Talking about DLPs, the Power Platform is growing rapidly. You know that. So we have over 1,000 connectors right now, and it feels like every week there's a new connector being published. Very important, set the default group for new connectors, maybe to blocked, so you have a chance to look into what's published, so that you have like a grip on what's going on right now. So these are the tenant settings, environments, data loss prevention policies. This is like the bare minimum. And from there, I'd like to add on to talk early about security groups and roles, because this is something that many people often overlook and the power of that. And I even meet customers who have like multiple environments and data loss prevention policies, and they have the feeling like this is already going great. And then I get a guest account and I get a Power Platform license and I see 30 to 40 environments. And like, am I supposed to see all those? Or should I act like on a need to know basis? Like, what's important for me? Let's pretend I'm a citizen developer. I there are 40 environments. I have no idea where to start. What am I going to do? And I usually close with the most important topic. And this is something that I at the beginning said, this is a secret topic. We don't have to talk about that yet, but it's the most important one. So we reveal it at the end. And this one is, I just give the headline. It's called documentation. Everybody knows what this is about because everyone likes to read good documentation, but nobody likes to write good documentation. And as we were talking about things being on the internet, said I've just read on the internet that every time you can't provide a document, governance document, a kitten dies. Once again, this is just something I read on the internet. I don't know if it's true, but I assume it is. So this is the harsh truth, actually. Whatever you have, wherever you start, wherever you're at right now, write it down because there are common people, there are starting people, and you have like, you don't know who's going to be the next Power Platform administrator, who is the lucky person, but write down what you have. And wherever you are, it's no shame if you just start out. We all start somewhere and some when, but write it down. And that makes it easier. And this is nice. Kind of the bare minimum settings that I often talk about.
I like it. I want to unpack just, I mean, I know we're already on time. And have you created any formalized way of capturing documentation when you start to get enlarged? So, and what I mean by a formalized way is that if you've got 300 makers, you would have potentially 300 different ways of writing documentation.
Absolutely.
Some being absolutely nothing to some being over the top. How do you standardize and publish in a consistent manner documentation? Have you seen anything? Is anybody doing any tooling that does that effectively and consistently?
Hardly, I do have to say. This is still a difficult topic, especially for citizen developer, because citizen developer are not don't have the idea how to write documentation. They're not trained, they're not schooled in this, and is difficult. No. I've seen a few tools, one or two in GitHub that capture all the mm-hmm. steps and actions that Flow contains, for example, and put that out as documentation, but this is more or less a technical documentation.
Yes.
What I've done recently a lot is I talk to customers and they come with an organizational solution for that. That every citizen developer has come some to, like to reams the they had to read the terms and conditions for Power Platform,
yes.
And that includes that I've read and understood those terms and So and that means every flow, every app needs at least a title that says what it does and the description mm-hmm. that takes it further.
Yes.
So that even if I'm another citizen developer and discovering a flow on app, or if I'm an administrator, I have to work with it, that at least I have a fair chance to see what this does. And I don't want to see a flow that is called test 1, 2, 3 or something else.
A description
and a title.
I like it.
Is the least that you have to provide. And then it really depends on how you want to use the platform in your organization and how strict and firm you are. So, and I'm German. I do love rules and regulations and stuff.
I love it. Michael, this has been so interesting talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. That was really nice, yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.